This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
There is a queer angle to every issue, and we will find it. Don't expect us to be nice. Don't expect it to be safe. And don't expect us to be politically correct. Nothing is sacred. We find the queer, profane, and cringeworthy wherever we can, here on Joy 94.9. Is nothing sacred?
Hi there, Joysters. You are on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9, and thanks to Sammy for the wet spot beforehand. This is Jim, and I'm here in the studio with Steph. Hi, Steph.
Hello, Jim.
And James. Hi, James.
Hi, both.
And we got an exciting program, as usual, tonight for you. We have a...
international guest.
Another international guest who we are about to bring up on the line.
We do love our international guests.
Who is in New York, who is a Nigerian-American lesbian LGBTI activist who's worked in both Nigeria and in New York, and she's going to be talking to us about LGBTI rights and so on in Nigeria, and black women's rights in the States.
Before we get to that, though,
we have some memberships. So during the wet spot, a number of people joined up. So Kelvin of Northcote.
Thanks, Kelvin.
Doug of St Kilda West.
On you,
and
Doug.
Nye of Cheltenham.
Thanks so much.
Good and on you lot.
And
welcome
and
to the family.
If you don't know the reason why so many people are signing up right now, it's because if you sign up today...
Before tomorrow night at 12,
you still go in the running to win the smart car they were advertising during Radiothon. So if you haven't signed up or if you haven't renewed, you can do that tonight.
And if, of course, you've got some spare cash around and you donate it to Joy, every donation over $2 is tax deductible and you can claim it off this year's tax return.
And we would love you very much. And if you do it during our show, we will say thank you to you on air. You can leave us a message and we'll read it out.
Yes, you can leave us a message on air at joy.org.au, which is the email address, or 0427JOY949, which is the SMS number, or you can call Robert, who's on the front desk out there. He's chafing at the bit to talk to you and to actually take down your credit card details.
Or if you're a super...
On 1300JOY949.
1300JOY949. Or if you're a super duper introvert and you don't want to talk to anyone, you can just go online we'll still find out that you signed up and we'll still like you just as much, possibly even more.
As soon as you push submit... We will know.
We will know.
We know who submits to Joy.
We love our members very, very much. Yeah, so thank you so much to Kelvin from Northcote, Doug from St Kilda West, and Nye from Cheltenham.
Now, the other thing we're going to do tonight is we're going to play some old Aussie songs. James and I have been trawling through the archives, partly because this week the ABC's had a fabulous doco on called... Blood and Thunder or something like that, which is the rise of the Easy Beats and then AC/DC, the Angels and Rose Tattoo and so on, and what became known as the Australian Sound, which went right down as far really as Midnight Oil, I think it would be fair to say. And so we're going to be playing some of those early Australian songs that made it big overseas.
There certainly was no going back after that.
There was no going back before and then after.
Talking about music makes me miss Patrick. If he was here, we could sing a duet. But since he's not here, one of you two may have to step
Patrick,
up to the plate.
You might have to rush in and sing Friday on My Mind.
I think that's
with
a dare.
Stevie Wright.
I think that's a dare, Steph.
Hopefully, if you're listening,
I won't
Patrick,
be singing. If we want members, we won't be listening to my singing. That's for sure.
All right. Well, what
but if
what
you donate $1,000, I'll sing something.
Did you hear that? If you donate $1,000, you can call 1300JOY949 or 0427JOY949 or on our website.
Jim's been saving his extra special voice just for that. Now, Jim, what's the song
it's
we've got?
It's an extraordinary voice, actually, and I mean that in the worst possible way.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You are on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. And I believe we have on the line now, don't we, James?
We do, Ade.
My friend Ade Tugbiele from New York. Ade, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hello.
Is it early in the morning?
Yes.
Not too early. Not too early, I hope.
No, not at all.
Now, let me just give a little introduction to you so that our listeners know who you are. You're a Nigerian-American LGBTI activist who is an artist and uses your art to raise awareness. Is that right?
Correct, yes.
So you most recently you were involved in the New York Pride float, I noticed, on your Facebook page for the Nigerian LGBTI community living in the US. And you've just recently had a fabulous piece called Hungry Homeless Homo, acquired by the Brooklyn Museum of Art in New York, which people could go online and actually have a look at if they wanted to, because it is fabulous.
Thank you very much, yeah.
And
I'm very glad.
Are you still represented by October Gallery in London and Goodman's in New York?
Yes, I am.
Good.
I have a show coming with Goodman in the fall. September,
which is autumn for us, which is our spring, funnily enough, because we're around the other way. So welcome to Australia, even though you haven't yet set foot here.
It's late at night here. It's 10 minutes past 10 at night, so we're all hyped up from the whole day.
I see.
So that was Steph that you were speaking to.
Hello,
then
Steph.
Hello.
How are you?
So Ade, can you tell us a bit about, I think the thing that listeners would really like to know is a bit about your recent involvement when you went back to Nigeria, and there was a bit of kerfuffle at the time, wasn't there, about LGBTI rights, and you had to leave the country and go back to the States.
Sure.
Can you tell us a bit about what happened?
Absolutely. I was in Nigeria doing research. I was awarded a Fulbright grant to do some research using my art to understand how art and spirituality was being reflected in people's daily lives. And when I got to Nigeria, I wanted to focus specifically on the LGBT community, on the gay community, because I felt that it would be important for me to speak to people who were experiencing the same emotional or physical sort of stresses and traumas that I was dealing with. So in a bit, it was a bit of a homecoming for me, but it was also very educational and instructive. And so I was doing this research 3 months into my program, into my project. The anti-gay bill was signed by Goodluck Jonathan, the president at the time.
The then president. He's no longer the president, is he?
Yeah, that's true. Buhari is now the president.
Is that bill as bad as the one in Uganda that we've all in Australia heard a lot about the Ugandan situation, but not so much about the Nigerian situation, which is a bit odd because there is a Nigerian community here, but we haven't heard a lot about it.
The Nigerian bill is a bit more complicated than the Ugandan bill. You know, the Ugandan is known as the Kill the Gays bill. In Nigeria, it's called the Same-Sex Marriage Prohibition Act. And there's a lot about marriage in traditional culture that this bill really speaks to. I believe that it was also happening during a time of the elections and a lot of political games happening at the time. The bill was essentially seen by the general public as a tool for political gain, for votes, because people believed that majority of Nigerians were against homosexuality. So Goodluck tried to use that as one way of winning the election, which he eventually did not win anyway.
But isn't the political situation in Nigeria is a bit of a north-south divide and a Muslim-Christian divide, isn't it?
Yes, there is a division there. You're hearing a lot about that in the north. You know, Nigeria is divided along many ways, not just religion, but also geographical. When you talk about north, south, east, and west, it's also divided by age. You know, 60% of the country are youth. They're people under the age of 30. And it's also divided by class. You know, it's still very, the middle class. My parents were one of the groups that we call the brain drain in the 70s, where they emigrated out of Nigeria. So that's left a lot of very wealthy and, you know, very poor people. I should say the wealthy are probably the top 1%, and then rest, everybody else is poor, and very small middle class. So there's a lot of divisions going on. And then what complicates it more is that Nigeria is a country with oil, which, you know,
which makes the rich richer. Is that right?
Yeah. So it's not an easy answer. It's a very complex situation. And a country with 170 million people as its population does not make it solvable overnight either.
Is it the second largest country in Africa after South Africa? I think population and economically it is, isn't it?
I believe it's the seventh largest country in the world. In Africa, I believe it may be the largest black nation. That's why Nigeria has this name, known as the Giant of Africa, because of its.
It's certainly the powerhouse of West Africa, isn't it?
Yes, correct.
Hmm. And, you know, most Australians won't remember this because they're far too young, but most Australians who are aware of Nigeria will be aware of the Biafran situation mostly, and the civil war that went on in Nigeria when
in the 60s
when Biafra tried to secede and lost, and they're still part of Nigeria, aren't they?
Yes, they
that
are.
That province or that state
part
is
of Nigeria. There are a few sects that still believe in the secession, that should have happened. I think that you'll find that mostly amongst the older generation. You don't hear many of the youth talking about secession or Biafra. However, that energy is still felt very much in communities and families across Nigeria. If you're aware of the Nigerian rights, Chimamanda Adichie, she's written about Biafra as well.
Well, we'll have to put her up on our Facebook page, I think, so that people can go and read her if they want to. The other thing that, of course, we all know about Nigeria is the awful situation with Boko Haram and the kidnapping of the girls, of the 239 girls, or however many it was. I think it was 239, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was what was initially published, but eventually we found a few weeks ago, actually just a week before the new president was sworn into office, they found over 1,000 women and children abducted by Boko Haram. And out of that 1,000, 200 of those girls were found pregnant. And so it's a very serious situation where the girls are going to now need therapy. A lot of them are bewildered. A lot of them have experienced abuse. They need education. They need healing. And so this is another shame on Nigeria's human rights record.
And of course, those children are going to be have a difficult upbringing, aren't they? Because many of them will be conceived across religious and ethnic lines, which is not always an easy situation in some societies.
Lisa, we're talking about girls between the age of 10 and 15. They're babies.
So they're children having children.
Yes, and, you know, for over 1,000 of them to have experienced that catastrophe is really a shame on the country. And for us to be even talking about homosexuality when you have all these other issues happening in the country, for you to be criminalizing innocent people, means, you know, it shows a lack of priority on the government's part, and also an insensitivity to people. It almost makes you feel like the government thinks you're stupid in a way, because don't they know that we see what's happening?
Yeah. So so how is the LGBT community fighting back against it?
There are several organizations in Nigeria that have been working with the LGBT community for years. And one of the main ones is the Initiative for Equal Rights, also known as TIERS, T-I-E-R-S. And they've been doing a lot of work on ground to not only advocate for safe sex, HIV awareness, they've been also bailing people out of jail who have been wrongly in prison, running to the help of people who have maybe been kicked out of their homes and rendered homeless, raising funds to help people in all sorts of ways. So this is the way through these organizations that we have been doing our best to fight the good fight.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
We were talking to you earlier about LGBT rights in Nigeria, and we actually want to talk a bit to you about how it is. How is your life in New York? It must be somewhat different to your life in Nigeria when you go back there.
Yes, it's very different. Clearly, I'm more free and open to be myself here. There is recently the Supreme Court in the U.S. just passed the gay marriage equality.
We all know about that here because our government is opposed to it.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
Everyone.
We will follow the U.S. into any war that they propose, but we won't follow them into marriage equality.
I have reservations about it as well, especially when there's inequality on so many other levels that is not being addressed within the gay community.
Well, I can think of
African Americans and
LGBTI asylum seekers in Australia, which is a big issue for us.
Exactly.
Or youth suicide or youth homelessness, which is much higher in the LGBTI community than it is in the general community. And I think we've sort of been sidetracked by marriage equality in a way.
Absolutely.
Can
in the U.S., 40%, I think, of homeless people identify as LGBT.
Wow. That's a lot.
I don't think any of us knew that.
And that's within the youth community, not LGBT adults, but LGBT youth.
Mm.
40% identify as gay, the homeless.
That's pretty terrible, isn't it, when you think about it? It's a blot on the American landscape.
I remember reading something, a discussion a few years ago about people in New York looking to having an LGBT-specific youth homelessness shelter. Did that end up happening? Is that available?
There are shelters here that cater to LGBT. You're talking about here in New York.
Yeah, in New York. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, there's actually an organization that I was recently on the board of called the PCYP, Pisa Kichino Youth Project, and they cater to LGBT homeless youth in New York City. They've been doing that work for several years now.
Mm.
Many of those youth also are undocumented.
Yes, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Is it particularly, just in relation to that, do you think it is because a lot of the youth come from other parts of America? Is that part of it? They've perhaps left their families and migrated to New York?
I would say some of them are from other parts of the country. Some of them are from outside the country. So that means they're also aliens. They're not citizens of the United States, and it brings up even other issues around their deportation status.
Which is a particular issue for the U.S., a much bigger issue for the U.S. than it is for us. We all hear about it all the time because we get so much American news here. But, our big issue in Australia is what we call turning back the boats, because there are so many refugees that try and get to Australia by boat. And the current Australian government just turns them back now and sends them back to Indonesia. And there are quite a few LGBT refugees amongst them, and they get no recognition and no status, and they don't have any real support, even in the gay community here, as far as I can see. And I think it's actually an international issue that needs an international response. So I'm hoping that somebody like the Human Rights Campaign or one of those that has been pushing for marriage equality will shift its resources and its focus to the freer movement of LGBTI people around the world.
I guess one thing I'm curious to know is, because obviously we know what's happening here in Australia and you know what's happening in America and have some sense of Nigeria as well, I'm sure. Do you have any advice or ideas about how we could be more collaborative between countries to take a sort of more international approach to LGBTI rights?
Yes, I do. I think that one of the reasons why we're having the issues we have in Nigeria is because of the low levels of education. People are very ignorant about issues around their body in general, around sexuality, around sex. So sex education, around anything that can promote, whether it's using social media or with mainstream media, to help enlighten people about what the issues are around homosexuality would be very helpful. I think right now you'll find that there's a lot of, because of the bad education system in Nigeria, you'll find a lot of, you know, things like prostitution and sex work, where people are just doing whatever they have to do to get a degree so they can either get out of the country or become successful, however they define it, you know.
In Nigerian traditional society, was there a systematic role for lesbians and gays? Like in many countries in traditional societies, there was basically you know, people found a space in the society in some ways. Did that happen in Nigeria, in Nigerian traditional society?
Yes, prior to colonization by the British, amongst the Igbo in Nigeria, I wouldn't group everyone together and say Nigerian traditional society because there are several different languages spoken to in Nigeria. It's a very diverse country. But the Igbo culture, there used to be a marriage between women. And again, this was, you know, powerful women who had major roles in society to play in community that could take on a wife or several wives, and they would marry and take care of them like any man would take care of a woman. Also, amongst the Hausa in the north, there still are openly gay men. Some are prostitutes, some are sex workers, but some of them identify as men who sleep with men. These were all things that were practiced in Nigeria and in other parts of Africa as well. There's a new book that was just recently released in Nigeria. It's called The Guidebook to Reporting Gender and Sexuality in Nigeria. It was written by my friend and colleague, Steve Aborisade, which outlines different parts in Nigeria and Africa that traditionally where homosexuality was practiced and not demonized or criminalized.
So those traditional practices, how do they survive in emerged post-colonial societies which are either strongly Christian or strongly Muslim?
I think they don't. I think a lot of it happens underground. A lot of things happen underground now. You may go into distinct towns and villages where people don't necessarily do things openly, but they're still practiced. Putting homosexuality aside, if you just talk about the practice of traditional religion and traditional spirituality, within the Yoruba, for example, my grandfather was not only a deacon in the church, but he also practiced our own traditional religion on the side, at the same time as having two wives, which was demonized by the church. So a lot of times people even combine things. It's a very superstitious, a very diverse culture that sometimes believes that you know, you can't have too much magic. If you have more than one, it's even better than having just one alone. So Christianity and Islam is seen as, in many cases, as just another magic to have in addition to the traditional one.
Right. So Nigeria has been making quite a lot of moves to modernize its society in other ways, hasn't it? And I remember, I've spoken to you about this before when we met in London and New York, that I once had the very great pleasure of meeting a very young and dynamic Nigerian politician called Babatunde Fashola, I think his name was, wasn't it? He was the governor of Lagos for some time, and he was a reformist, I thought, and he was quite impressive. He was a bit Nelson Mandela-ish when I met him. The legacy of people like that remain and continue through the politics of Nigeria at the moment?
No, Fashola is no longer the governor of Lagos. Now it's Ambode. Ambode won the election along with Buhari's presidential election. Ambode is also very, very good. He's very popular amongst the youth in Nigeria. He's seen as a more progressive voice, but we have not heard him as of yet come out to say anything about gay rights in Nigeria.
I'm interested to go back to what you were saying before about using social media. What proportion of young people in Nigeria use social media and have access to the internet?
Oh my God. I think if
not everyone, as a number, just as a guess.
Does everyone have a smartphone? Is it like here that they can't, you know, we actually have to have campaigns here to stop people being run over by trams because they keep on walking across in front of trams with their smartphones in their faces?
Yeah, no, Nigerian youth are very savvy with telecommunications and social media. It's probably the main way people get their news right now. You know, you still hear the older folks watching CNN, but the youth are all online. There are cyber cafes everywhere in Lagos. Mm-hmm. When I was in Lagos, I was in one cyber cafe to the next if I didn't have power at home. So this is, you know, I wouldn't say that you should shy away from that as a tool. It's a very powerful tool and one that I think can bring about revolution.
We know that. We've seen the Arab Spring.
Exactly, just like the Arab Spring in Egypt, for sure.
You mentioned before that at least the new governor, who you see is somewhat progressive and was supported by the youth. Do you think that that has helped the youth become more progressive or at least get more news so that they're able to be a little bit more, what's the word, so a little bit more progressive in their views?
Well, I can't say so right now because he's only been in office for 1 month or so. The changeover just happened, so there hasn't been much change since last year. But, you know, Nigeria and Lagos in particular is a very fast-moving city. You know, people get this. We just had our gay pride parade in New York. The Nigerians here in New York had our gay pride yesterday. And within 3 hours, before I even got home, pictures and news of our parade was already on social media in Nigeria on a blog by Linda Ikeji. You can look up Linda Ikeji and see all the hate messages we got on her blog from marching in New York. Not all of them were hateful, but most of them were. So people are very savvy. It's a global world right now. What happens in one place is easily picked up in the next place within hours or minutes.
Can you tell us actually a little bit about the gay pride in general? Because I think everyone in Australia has obviously seen a lot on social media. I think there's so many rainbows on Facebook. It just jumps out of you.
I mean, just to set a bit of context for this, we don't celebrate gay pride at the same time as the Northern Hemisphere does. We recognise things like Stonewall, but the gay pride awareness events are usually held here in the late summer and early autumn, and around the gay and lesbian Mardi Gras in Sydney and Melbourne's Midsummer Carnival, which are big festivals that people do know about internationally. But so they're on at different times of the year. So when people start talking about pride all over their Facebook page, you know, there was quite a lot of misconception that it was about the Supreme Court gender ruling rather than that it was Pride Month for the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah,
but so it's got to be put in that context. I mean, the march is pretty big in New York, isn't it? How many Nigerians marched, do you know?
We had a good contingent, about 10 to 15 people, which was up from 4 of last year. It was only our second time marching.
You had a fabulous new hairdo, I noticed.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I might have to steal that photograph and put it onto our Facebook page so people can see how fabulous your hairdo was.
Oh, thank you. You must credit the people who did it. They're very good gay establishment also. Barbers and hairdressers here in New York. just credit them. But, yeah, I think, it was just our second time marching, and I made it very clear to, people in the news who came to interview us that we were not marching because of marriage equality. We were marching on behalf of people who could not march back home. We were marching on behalf of those who are less fortunate, again, either have been kicked out of their homes and rendered homeless or thrown in jail unnecessarily or abused. We're marching on their behalf and against the anti-gay law, which is still in place.
And
we're not marching.
I suppose it's quite important for you to differentiate the fact that you are part of the African-American community in one way, but you're a distinct part of the African-American community, it's fair to say, isn't it? As Nigerian-Americans, it's not the same thing as being long-term African-American born and descended from slavery and so on and so on. Your community is an immigrant community.
That's right, isn't it? It actually took me a long time to realize that, because I grew up, in my parents' house. My parents are still very Nigerian. They've been in New York for some time, but we were raised at home, and we went to all Nigerian churches. We were raised like as if we were back home. So, I constantly had to code switch between what happened in my house and how I reacted to things outside of the house while growing up in New York as a child. In Lagos, obviously, I was there for 7 years as a child, but that was obviously no question how I had to behave. But when I came back here, I realized that just being black is not enough, that you have to really understand that there are different types of black people. And just the same way I say, don't group all Nigerians together, don't group all Africans together, you can't group all black people together the same way either because of the color of our skin. So politically, I identify with the African-American movement because I believe that the civil rights movement is the 60s here. Nigeria has a lot to learn from it, actually. So people died for the right for me to be here, to be able to practice the freedom, to even be able to live as a woman who loves women, was somebody who died for me to do that as a black woman. So I respect the African-American movement very much and believe we can learn from it. But I don't identify with it wholly because of my immigrant background.
Well, we're going to talk. We'll talk more about this. We do need to go and have a short break with some messages from community announcements and so on. But we will be back to talk to you for one last session in just one moment. You're on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9, and it is 12 minutes to 11. We have been talking for almost an hour to Ade from New York, who's a Nigerian LGBTI activist living in New York, but from originally Nigeria. Are you still there, Ade?
Yes, I'm still here. Thank you.
Look, this has been a really exciting show for us to have you on the line from New York. You've raised a whole lot of questions for us all, and I hope we've raised some for you as well. And we're going to be, as you just heard from that announcement, this program will be podcast within the next week, and we'll make sure that you get a link to it.
Something else I wanted to ask about, I know you sent a link to Jim a couple of weeks ago with a podcast from Nigeria, which is the first LGBT podcast in Nigeria, from what I understand, and I've been listening to it this afternoon, and I'm curious if you know how that came about or how it's been received in Nigeria.
It came about through social media. We all found out about each other through Facebook. I believe that he's doing amazing, dangerous, and consciousness-raising work that we all need to support. In Nigeria, I know he's been getting very good support from people in other media campaigns that support our movement, as well as from leaders within the organization PEER, the Initiative for Equal Rights, whom I mentioned earlier. And so he's been doing very good work, and I think he should be widely supported for his efforts.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd love to speak to him on the show. He sent me a tweet this evening, which I was very excited about to get a tweet from Nigeria.
We'll probably try and get him to be a guest on the show at some stage. Is he in any danger though in Nigeria if people like us got him on as a guest? Because you know the last thing we want to do is to put really fantastic LGBTI activists at risk.
I think he's done a good job of protecting himself. He's not using his real name from what I know. But, you know, and he works a lot at cyber cafes, also from what I know, not at home. So he's put some protections in place for himself. Of course, that doesn't mean that he's 100% safe. But, you know, he's been smart about the way he's gone about doing the important work. One of the hardships he has is dealing with all the constant electricity and power cuts in Nigeria, which put a stumble into his progress when it comes to actually releasing podcasts. Sometimes has delays because of power cuts or, you know, not having good equipment with his computer, breaking down. So he's been doing fundraisers on that as well, and we've all been contributing money to help him out.
Mm. It must be difficult to find guests and to interview people while trying to protect yourself and have some anonymity, I suppose.
I think most people understand the need for anonymity, and if you're concerned about the issues first and foremost and just getting them out, then all of that should not really matter. It doesn't matter to me anyway.
Is there a growing band of LGBTI straight allies in Nigeria that can be identified and drawn on for support?
Straight allies. I'm sure they're there. It's just, you know, who will you get to speak up? You know, Nigeria has also, within the anti-gay law, threatened to throw in jail people who are allies as well.
So people who promote, they use that sort of language, do they?
If you're a family member that knows that your son or your daughter is gay and you don't report them, you can be thrown in jail, things like that, all those threats. So, you know, people I'm sure may want to say something, but they're not encouraged to at all.
That's awful.
Mm.
So thank you so much, Ade, for being our guest tonight. It's just been fantastic. And we do have another message here. We've got a message from our co-host, Claire, who is usually on but has got the night off tonight. And the answer is yes, Claire. And we will push you in the direction of that question about homeless people living in unsafe conditions, which we talked about earlier tonight. So
thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Is there anything else? I'm interested in, again, how we can help support you, I suppose, from Australia. It's a bit tricky for us to come visit your art show as much as I'd like to, but is there any other way we can help support you or the Nigerian LGBT communities?
I think just continue to educate and enlighten people. Whenever you hear something on the news, speak up against it, post the link, share it with your network, and if you have the capacity to support financially as well, you know, people like No Strings Podcast, whenever you can, I would encourage that. Mm.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Ade.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.